Hey everyone, welcome to a brand new season of Lunch Therapy. That's right, this is your host, unlicensed lunch therapist Adam Roberts. And after multiple iterations of the podcast, I've decided to go back to my lunch therapy roots. So once again, I will be asking people what they had for lunch and then analyzing it. And my first guest back on the show is one of my old pals from back when I was a TV writer on a show called The Real O'Neills on ABC. His name is Lee Sung-jin, or when I knew him, he was Sunny Lee. And he is the creator of the Netflix series, the hugely popular, extremely successful Netflix series, Beef. And so I'm so excited to have him on the podcast today. And he's done so much work in television. He's written for Tuca and Birdie. He's written for Two Broke Girls. He's written for Dave. And so we have a lot to talk about. In today's episode, we talk about the Korean dishes that he loves the most.
You know, seolleongtang or yukgaejang or any of the soups.
Eating quickly as a teenager.
You want to scarf down your food as fast as you can and get the hell out of there. You know, you just want to go back to your room.
And one of the real life incidents that inspired Beef.
You know, immediately when I saw the urine, I had a very similar reaction to Amy in the show where I'm like, what the fuck?
All right. Without further ado, here is my lunch therapy session with Lee Sung-jin. Lee, it's so nice to have you on my podcast. It's been a long time. Congratulations on Beef.
Oh, thanks, man. It has been a long time. And feel free to call me Sunny. I feel like... I do Lee Sung-jin for credits and for like press stuff, but for friends, you know.
Sunny. Well, actually, yeah. That's a good place to start, because when I knew you way back when, I mean, and perhaps still now, your name was Sunny Lee. And then you changed it to what I think was the name that you were born with, which was
yes.
Lee Sung-jin. So can you talk a little bit about that journey of your name and what where you're at and how you got there?
Yeah. So I was born in Korea and in Korea, your surname comes first. So, you know, as Lee Sung-jin, and moved back and forth. And, I moved to the States, and then I moved back to Korea for third, fourth and fifth grade. And so when I came back to Minnesota for sixth grade is not a good time to have the name Lee Sung-jin, you know?
Right. That's a good point.
Especially back then. And so, attendance was just a shit show. Like every day, like the teacher right. would find new ways to add consonants to my name. And
really funny.
Yeah,
like, my grandmother changed our last name from Rothenberg to Roberts, and so I think in my heritage too, there's a little bit of name changing and self-consciousness.
We contort ourselves, and so I just remember one day I was looking at my homework and I was upset at the name section, and I just wrote Sunny for some reason, mm-hmm. and it kind of stuck. I've been going by Sunny ever since. And then, you know, kind of a perfect storm of events happened where the first half of my career, I went by Sunny Lee professionally, which is when we knew each other. And I think, you know, I had a writing partner when I started, and, you know, when we broke up, it was kind of a good time for me to figure out why I actually want to write. Mm-hmm. And I had also kind of gone through like a mental breakdown and just not in a good place. And so I started therapy and just really trying to like be comfortable with myself, you know? Mm. And part of that, I think, was also just being okay with my name. And I remember I was working on maybe it was Tuca and Birdie. And I think it was like on the weekend, and I got coffee from Dogtown Coffee in Santa Monica on Main Street. And, you know, you give your card and then they call your order and they use the name on your card. And naturally the server butchered my name. And then behind me, there were kind of two white women in their 30s who just started cracking up. And so I immediately reverted back to my sixth grade self. I kind of hunched over and grabbed my food and coffee and just kind of like scurried out of there, so embarrassed. And I was like, man, that didn't feel good. Why is that? And I think this was around the time Parasite had come out.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was just thinking about Bong Joon-ho and like director Bong, he has the coolest name in the world. Like, no one makes fun of his name. You hear that name, you just think awesome. Or like Park Chan-wook, you know, like he's got a great name. And I'm like, well, that's because they make cool shit. And so I really was like, maybe I should change, as I start to do more stuff that's more wholly my voice, I should go with my Korean name and maybe like help three syllable Korean names be associated more with like cool stuff, you know.
And how amazing that, like, in that moment, it's like wasn't there like a book called The Secret where like you kind of manifest your own destiny? I just believe it's sort of like in doing that you then created a show that's become one of the biggest shows on TV. So how amazing that you brought that about, and how fascinating that like your identity and your name is so tied to that. So was any of that experience, because I mean, having loved Beef and watched it, like I feel like cultural identity feels like a huge part of the story. And was any of what you just talked about sort of in the ingredients for what led to Beef?
I definitely didn't intend on, like, I didn't go into it being like, I want to sell an Asian American show or talk about identity necessarily. It was really just a road rage incident that happened to me. And that kind of sparked this idea. And I had met with A24 and Robbie Nandan, who I'd known for years. He was like, you know, you should do something with this idea. And I had known Steven Yeun for a long time. And so that was just naturally the first person I kind of called for to discuss it. And originally we thought that Steven and I had been trying to like find something to work on together forever. And usually he says no quite a bit. And this one, I was like three sentences into my idea. And he was just like, that's it. That's the one. And so, you know, I had Steven attached and we were trying to figure out who to put opposite him. And, my actual road rage incident in real life involved like a white BMW X3 and the driver was a middle-aged white guy. And so we briefly discussed maybe like a Stanley Tucci type, you know. That was like for a day that we went down that path. And it just felt too like on the nose or literal. And then you have to start talking about race, which I didn't want to do. And I had known Ali Wong from working on Tuca and Birdie, but I didn't know her very well, but she had called me to talk about another project. And I was kind of like, oh, something about, you know, we were catching up and as she was talking about life, there's just something about her that made me think it would be so much more interesting if the person opposite Steven was Ali. And so I pitched Ali the idea and she, you know, and then she was in. And then naturally then, like, you have two Asian leads, you know, once you start chasing character first in your stories, then I think subtextually the identity stuff starts kind of bleeding through, you know.
Yeah, totally. Well, I think this might be a good segue because I'm trying to figure out what you're eating. We'll begin our therapy session now, and I will ask you, Sonny, what are you having for lunch today? He's eating it in front of me, so I'm curious what this is.
This is a shakshuka from Baker's Bakery in Woodland Hills. I actually have never ordered it before.
Okay.
And so this is a first. It's pretty good. It's kind of on the spicy side, which I like. The sauce is really great. Eggs cooked pretty good. very classic shakshuka, but kind of lacking some vegetables. But they do have this... they did give this cucumber and tomato salad, which was nice. So overall, I'd rate it like I don't know. Do we rate on this?
No. We just use your lunch as a prompt to sort of launch into a therapy session. So okay.
I'm
going to
use
this as
the food.
I mean, we could start there. I mean, that brings up like being critical, self-critical.
Yeah.
We can go down that route. I have to say, like, I can't help but bring up a story that, as I remember, knowing each other, that I feel like you might know what I'm going to bring up. But when we were in a writer's room together,
yes,
you did one of the most incredible food things I've ever seen somebody do, which is you ate an entire box. Of, was it Krispy Kreme donuts?
Mm-hmm. It was.
It was 12, a dozen donuts, right?
It was a dozen donuts. I think I actually saw Dave and Casey yesterday on the picket lines at Paramount.
Those were our showrunners.
They were the showrunners of Real O'Neill's. And I think maybe that spurred from David. Weren't we like talking about whether someone could eat a dozen Krispy Kremes in one sitting. And I was like, yeah, no problem. Like, I do that for fun. And then they're like, no way. And so then we should have been working, but we ordered Krispy Kreme donuts. Uh-huh. And I think it had to be under a certain time, if I'm not mistaken. There was a clock.
In an hour. I think it was within an hour.
Within an hour, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I think I got to 9 and I had to bow out, I think.
And I remember very vividly, and I hope I'm not revealing too much, that you left the room mysteriously. And then when you came back later, you told us that you went to a Best Buy to use the bathroom there because you were so...
Yeah.
You didn't want to use the bathroom there.
No, I mean, that's a big thing of me in writer's rooms. I hate...
Yeah.
Like, using the restroom at work to go number 2 is just my worst nightmare.
Me too. I remember one of our coworkers, Kevin... Kevin Beagle was like, no one can do number 2 in the bathroom here. And I remember, like, I was brand new. I was like a staff writer and I was so nervous. I was like, where am I supposed to go to the bathroom? I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And so, yeah, that's so funny.
Yeah. When I worked on the Warner Brothers lot, I worked for this multicam and, those were like bungalows, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, there was one bathroom downstairs. It's like pretty tight quarters. So I would just, like, during lunch, go on like the longest walk and travel to like the opposite end of the lot. And I would, I would wait till like an executive would like leave like a main building and like the door would open and I would like scurry in and then I would like go to like a random floor and just like find like the cleanest, quietest bathroom and then just, you know, so
business.
And then I think on Real O'Neill's, all we had were like other shows on other floors, right? And so you couldn't just go to another floor because then like it's very obvious that like this stranger just, which some people did on our floor.
Yeah,
if I
as
remember
you were saying
correctly.
That, I remember like kicking them out or like calling them out for that.
Yeah, that's so funny.
This podcast has just lost 100 listeners, by the way.
Yeah, no. But that's why I had to drive to a Best Buy, yeah.
Yeah, well, I had to bring up that story because I just was immediately thinking of it. But now on to your lunch, because, okay, so shakshuka salad. So, I mean, already I'm getting the sense, and the fact that you haven't ordered this before, that when it comes to lunch, maybe you're an adventurer or you like to try new things. Is that sort of an accurate thing?
It's actually the opposite. I usually order, I skip breakfast and I tend to have my lunches be breakfasty. I really like a late breakfast. And I usually order like the same 2 or 3 things from different places. And then ever since the show finished, I've been trying to get my health back because I mean, the show just destroyed my mental and physical well-being. You know, I was working like, you know, 16 to 20 hour days for about 2.5 years straight, you know. And
were you shooting, like, I was going to ask you, like, when did the pandemic happen in terms of the creation of this show? Was it during, before, after?
It was during. So we pitched the show during the pandemic. I believe we pitched it March of 2020. It's either 2020 or 2021. I want to say, but I guess the pandemic was going on both years, right?
Yeah, 2020, I think, was the start, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, so then maybe it was 2021 that we pitched it. And then, you know, we got kind of like a bidding war and all these places were offering straight to series. And so, you know, we pitched it in March and we had a writer's room by April. It was
really?
Very,
wow.
Very fast.
That's so cool.
And so, and then so the writer's room was all over Zoom, which is not great, you know? And then we started prep at the end of that year. So, the protocols were still really strict. You got a mask everywhere and the whole shoot, you know, we just had a mask everywhere. I think towards the end of our shoot, there was like a new lightening of protocols where if you were outside, you didn't have to wear a mask. And that was just like for like the last month of shooting. But we were pretty like in the thick of COVID for all of
and for people who are listening, it's like, you know, because, you know, my husband Craig, who, you know, shot a movie during COVID. And just in terms of like how much more work that is and how much more.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Everyone has to pass a test. There's like all kinds of COVID, you know, people on set. And so I imagine that probably added a lot of stress to your creation process. Yeah.
It's tough. Cause you then, I mean, we take for granted how much like seeing facial expressions matter.
Yes, you know? Totally. Yeah.
It's so hard to like express with your eyes kind of like how you feel about something. And so and you just don't feel like it's, you know, you have to like socially distance and you're always like people telling you to like kind of back up from each other. So yeah, it's really hard. But
so what were you eating during the shoot that was so unhealthy?
Oh, you name it. You name it. I was eating it. I was just, I don't do well. I think the first thing that goes for me when I'm stressed is nutrition. And so I mean, as you see in the show, there's a lot of junk food and candy in the show. Both characters are kind of like
Burger King chicken sandwiches.
Yeah, Burger King chicken sandwiches. And so I just, you know, candy, sweets, junk food. I just kind of Cool Ranch Doritos. I was eating like nonstop on set. Gardetto's, like those little like snack, you know, packs. And what are those chips called with like it has like we ate it when we were kids, like with like the brown like the brown crispy thing. And like
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I gotta look this up now.
Okay. Gardetto's crispy chips. It's funny because when I was in the writer's room with you, we used to get Trader Joe's peanut butter cups. Do you remember those like dark chocolate?
I
would like dole out like four of them throughout the day. Like I'd put them in front of me and be like, okay, like, and you know, you could have one at 4 o'clock, one at five. But by the end, I was just like shoveling them into my face. Did you look it up?
Yeah, it's Gardetto's.
Okay. I don't know it. Is it like a potato chip?
It's an irresistible mix of crunchy breadsticks, salted pretzel, double roasted rye chips, topped off with Gardetto's family recipe seasoning.
Wow. Okay.
Pretty great.
So when the show is over, you're like, okay, back to health, back to nutrition. So did you like do like a detox or like do a cleanse or one of those Hollywood things?
Well, I'm just now starting it because, you know, I like once the show wraps, you go right into like press. And and that was really, it was just nonstop February, March, April. You know, and Netflix, to their credit, they're very collaborative with marketing and coming up with the campaign together. So it was really still like a full-time job, it felt like. It wasn't until really, I'd say a month ago, that I started to come up with for air. And I've been, you know, I started boxing. I saw like Damon Lindelof on Instagram. Like he posts like Instagram stories where this boxing coach comes to his house and boxes with him. And so I just like reached out to him. I was like, hey, like that, can I do that? And so
that's pretty cool. That's a good like high-end kind of exercise. I feel like having a boxer come to your house and
it's been really great. And so I've been doing that. I have this trainer three times a week. And so that was like step one. And now like I'm trying to get the nutrition right. And so this lunch that you're seeing me have is really kind of like me trying to turn a corner and not eat the same stuff.
This nutrition period and after the show ended, like, was there like you always got the same three lunches. So like, what were they?
I really love like a breakfast sandwich on like an English muffin. So I'll do like English muffin, add extra eggs, you know, American cheese with turkey bacon.
Mm-hmm.
That
like, sounds really good.
Oh man, that's the best. And
that doesn't sound that unhealthy. You have protein, you have a little carbohydrate, you have it in the morning. It's like you have the whole day to burn it off.
Thank you. Yeah. I'll do something like that. You know, I love a McDonald's like breakfast. McDonald's is kind of my vice.
Really?
I think my second job ever was at McDonald's. And
Interesting.
yeah, my first
Why
job was
did you
at
make it?
Walmart, but
Why did you make it Burger King on the show and not McDonald's?
well, I wanted to like come up with something that people maybe hadn't like seen before, or like it wasn't in like the cultural consciousness, and maybe, you know, like, and something my family, we would go, I mean, fast food was just like a staple for us, and we would hit all the places, Arby's, McDonald's, Burger King. But when we went to Burger King, our go-to was that original chicken sandwich. For some reason, like just my mom, dad, me, my sister, we would all get that sandwich. And then I was working on Dave, the show on FX, season two. And during lunch one day, it like, I don't know how, but it came up, and I think I had either ordered it or maybe Dave had ordered it. And I was like, we were both like, oh my God, like the original chicken sandwich, the long one,
Yeah, it
like
looked
that's my
really good
favorite.
when he when they were when
Yeah.
she was eating it on the camera. I was like, wow, I would kind of want to get one of those.
Yeah, so Dave and I really bonded over our mutual love for the original chicken sandwich. So then when we were trying to figure out what Danny, Steven's character Danny, what he would turn to in a time of crisis, it just felt like the right thing. And I really liked just comedically being able to say like the long one. That just kind
Right.
of made me laugh a little
And what's the third lunch? Okay, I have to finish out this part of
bit.
the
I'm trying to think what else I usually go to. I mean, I'll do, it's very boring, but I'll find a breakfast place, and I'll just do like your standard like American breakfast. Like, you know, I usually do over medium, turkey bacon, some sort of potatoes or hash browns, and then you know, and then I'll usually throw some pancakes in there too. Like, I don't know, you know, I just gotta
This
go
all,
for the
yeah, this all
sweets.
sounds very good. I'm curious. So you were born in Korea, is that what you said earlier? So in terms of Korean food, how does Korean food function in your life and your history and your present day?
Oh yeah, Korean food is definitely my go-to for dinner, I'd say. Koreans don't really eat breakfast. It's what, like growing up, like there we don't like we do maybe like rice with some like hot water in it, and then like some kimchi, but we don't really have like breakfast dishes.
Hot
And
water in it, so just like kind of loosen it up, you mean? Like kind of like a
just to like kind of create sort of like almost like a, I don't know, like a porridgey
like
feeling.
kanji kind of.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
Okay.
And so I don't really turn to Korean food for morning, but for dinner, my wife and I don't cook, but we order Korean fairly regularly. And growing up, like every meal, other than the fast food, was Korean. And so yeah, it's definitely when I'm not feeling well, or I'm feeling, you know, stressed or sad, like a good Korean meal, like whether it's, you know, seolleongtang or yukgaejang or any of the soups, like, you know, sundubu, you know, or like any sort of jjigae, which is like, you know, those broths, I that'll just set me right. And of course, like Korean barbecue is the best thing in the world. And so yeah, you know, Stephen, Ali, and I, we meet maybe once or twice a month at Park's Barbecue.
I love that place. Yeah, it's so
And then
good.
and Jake Schreier, our producing director on the show, we try to do our beef reunion there. And it's funny because he has Stephen's pictures on the wall and Ali's isn't. And so we've been trying to see like how often you have to go before Ali gets the
Right.
picture. We've gone like six times,
That's hilarious.
and still no
You know,
picture
you
for
should do
Ali.
as a prank. You should put like your picture on the wall next to
I know.
Steven. What's the place in Koreatown that has like, I don't even know what it is. It's like short ribs that are like burbling away, and then they take like cheese. There's like,
Cheese.
and they
Yes.
blowtorch the cheese. Like, what's that called?
Yes.
I want to try that.
That's agashi gopjang, and the I think that's kalbijjim that you're talking about, and they add the
Yes.
cheese to it.
That's really good.
I personally, it is very good. I'm as an older generation Korean, I kind of like, I know like they do it over in Korea now too, but adding cheese to a Korean meal feels so like sacrilegious to me, just because like we're all lactose intolerant and
Yeah, that's on the
and
show. You know, beef, like in the last episode, don't they talk about
they
how
do, yeah.
they eat beef in Korea, but they don't drink milk, and
Yeah.
or they discuss them.
Can't.
And I thought that
Yeah.
was so fascinating. Like, what is the deal with that? Did you research it?
I didn't. I probably should, because certainly Danny's conclusion in the show isn't correct.
What does he conclude? I'm trying to remember what he said.
Well, he's just like, what did he say? He's like, how come we're all lactose intolerant? And he's like, because, and then I think Ali says, like maybe our ancestor, is like, couldn't tolerate it. And he's like, that doesn't make sense, because like we all our meals are cow, so then if you have the cow, then why wouldn't
Right.
you drink
Yeah.
the milk?
That makes a lot of
Yeah.
sense. Yeah.
And so but I'm sure there's a reason, I think, or we're just like, yeah, really bad about milk. But I heard something recently, and maybe you know this, is I guess there's like this new research that like truly whole milk, like that's been like pasteurized correctly, or like straight from the teat of the cow,
Sure.
it, like apparently people who are lactose intolerant can drink that. Like it
Oh, like
actually,
unpasteurized? Like, I mean, like raw milk?
maybe it's raw milk.
Yeah, that would make sense to me because I feel like in countries that don't pasteurize, I feel like there's less lactose intolerance. I could have literally just made that completely up, but it
Yeah.
feels like something I might have
Yeah,
learned. Yeah.
let's run with that. I think
Okay.
that feels
That's
pretty
really
good.
funny. Well,
Yeah.
it's interesting because your show is called Beef. And
Yes.
when that moment came, I was like, I wonder if this is like symbolic in some way of what the show's about. And I was trying to
Oh, yeah.
like scratch the surface a little more because it was almost like my interpretation was that when you have the beef but you don't drink the milk, you're not taking advantage of what's right in front of you. And I was thinking about Steve's character's relationship with his brother and Allie's relationship with her husband and daughter, and it's like they both are sort of not kind
Yes.
to their own family. So I don't know. That was sort of how I interpreted it. But I don't know if that was
I
intentional.
know, I love that interpretation. I think, with a lot of stuff, we sort of chase we like chase certain things because you kind of intuitively know that it feels right, and then you're not even really sure why, and like you loosely have an idea that like thematically this is going to fit somehow. Like even the painting that you see after episode one, the birds don't sing, they screech in pain. That's a Renaissance painting that I've loved for quite some time, and I just, for some reason, I was like, that's got to be in the show. And even when I pitched the show, it was in the pitch deck, and it was just this intuitive feeling that I was like drawn to it, and I knew it like somehow matched the themes of the show, and I didn't really look into it that much. And then once we locked it in, I started looking into it more and like reading up on sort of like what the artist intended for the painting, and it couldn't be more fitting, and so sometimes you just kind of chase it intuitively, and it kind of makes sense for some reason. But I hadn't thought of that, but I do really love that interpretation of
Oh,
that
thank
moment.
you. That's why I get paid the big dollars.
Yeah.
Actually, in terms of beef as the title, though, just in general, I mean, did you always know that was the title, or did that come later?
It took us a minute to find it. Let me see if I can find the old. We had some pretty horrible ideas for other titles.
Really?
I'm looking at my notes app. I'm gonna see if I can
Oh, that's
find.
cool. We got inside scoop. I mean, because like beef like comes up on the show a little bit in little places. Like obviously, like I mean, he's doing the hibachi grills at the beginning. He's returning those, and it feels like you could cook beef on those. Did you look up?
Let me see if I can find. Oh, here we go. Yeah. Well, so we knew we wanted something that kind of like sold conflict,
Yes, sure.
and Ryan Murphy already used feud, And so I couldn't do that. And so we were like, maybe Duel, but then there's that, Spielberg movie
Sure.
Duel. So we're like, nah. And we were going down some horrible ideas. There was like Eye for an Eye, Cautionary Tales, The Art of Revenge, Blood from a Stone, Two Graves, because, man who desires revenge should dig two graves. That's an idiom.
Oh, I don't even know that one, but that makes sense. Yeah.
Adversaries, Retribution, Altercations, Interacting with Strangers was one. That's horrible. So glad we didn't do
I'll
that.
agree with
Yeah.
that.
And so we were going down these paths and nothing was feeling right. And then just one day I was like, I think I was talking to someone, talking about like beefing with somebody, you got beef with so and so. And I was like, wait, yeah, like that's a good way to sell conflict. But then also, like the word beef in the, kind of slang way, of course, means conflict, but then there's so many other things that that word implies. And it's a very punchy title too. It's good for merch. A24 is big on merch. And
Is there beef merch already?
there is, yeah, I think you can go to the A24. I think they sold out, but there's A24 merch that has
Wow,
beef.
that's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like Spaceballs, the flamethrower, Spaceballs, the breakfast cereal. You remember
I love that movie.
Yeah.
But and then I think like thematically it starts to like something about like nature and like our animalistic instincts, and then also like capitalism and how much beef plays a part of that. And there's just a lot of like subtext stuff that the word was giving. So the instant I pitched that to A24, they were on board.
Well, I'm curious, like one thing that's coming up as we're talking, and I just started thinking about this, was I was thinking about your name, where we started, and being in school in sixth grade and not wanting to be embarrassed by your name and changing it to Sunny. And for some reason that I'm kind of connecting that to the American food that you like to eat during the day and then the Korean food you like to eat at night. And also just like the nature of the food you described for lunch is so all American. Like it's like McDonald's, it's like pancakes and egg McMuffins, And like I'm curious like how food functions in your own sense of identity.
Oh, wow, that's a great question, which I haven't probably ever thought about and should. I think, there's this one little segment in the finale where Danny he kind of goes on a rant, and there's like these kind of dissolves happening between his Skittle vomit and the moon, and then it's like the nighttime like landscape, and he's ranting about how we're the guinea pigs, like people our age that, secondhand smoke, junk food, and even porn, that people of our generation, like we were like kids today, they get like parents are like looking at organic stuff and
Sure.
ingredients, and there's so much like research and studies about what's like bad for you. And of course, kids today have their own set of problems with social media and, the world ending. But I feel like we had a very particular set of problems of, for convenience and for capitalism, there were all these things that were made that no one really questioned, and we just devoured. And so that becomes comfort. And to have as comfort things that are bad for you is just
Yes.
something that isn't great. And so I
That's really
think,
funny. Yeah, I mean, during
yeah.
the pandemic I started buying breakfast cereal again. Like I would buy like
Yeah.
honeycomb and like Apple
Yeah.
Jacks, and they tasted so good because they were
It's the
so
best.
nostalgic. I
Yeah.
loved it, and I was like, but this is so bad. And
Oh,
so I totally get what you're saying.
I love Lucky Charms. Like that
Oh,
is
they're so good. Yeah.
my go-to, but it's so bad for you.
Yeah.
And
Oh, it's just pure chemicals and corn syrup, basically.
yeah, and it was sold to us like that. I mean, remember like all the labels they'd put on it, like that it was like there's nutrition in it and has this, it
Yeah.
has like vitamin blah blah blah. And we're
Sure.
like,
Oh my God.
and so I think my relationship with food, especially American food, and because also like, you come over as immigrant families, and you're trying to like there's probably a little bit of trying to fit in, and there's also like trying to save money, and fast food is the th I mean, you know, like it's really fucked up that like the thing that was supposed to be sold to disenfranchised communities that are struggling is like the thing that, you know, also crippling them in the long term with health
Sure.
problems. And so,
Absolutely. Yeah.
yeah, it's I wish that my comfort food was a little bit healthier. And I think, yeah, so yeah, my relationship with this stuff is kind of there's like tension there, and I guess that,
Yeah.
you know, there's the
Well, there's
same
an
tension that you
interesting.
have in the show.
Yeah, I mean, there's a food scene in the show that I found very like poignant, as a food person, because when she goes to her parents' house and there's that beautiful bowl of soup that her mother made, and it's almost like she's not even like, I mean, maybe I'm interpreting it wrong, but my impression was like she's not that interested or like that grateful for what she's eating. And it's more about her anger at her parents, but like yet there's this like beautiful bowl of soup in front of her. And I was curious like
That's
how
interesting.
food functioned for you in the show, if it had more symbolism or if it was just like that was just the props department, like here's the soup they'd be eating.
Oh, well, I mean, that soup is a pretty popular Vietnamese soup that's like kind of the comfort food. And I talked to Ali about it too. I'm like, oh, like, what do you think she should eat? And we landed on that soup. But I think, you know, her sort of reticence to be scarfing it down in that moment, it is not dissimilar, I think, from moments from my childhood, or even for my sister. And I think a lot of families that have kind of colder upbringings, where I remember as an adolescent, and I know it's not specific to, I know like white families and any other families can be like this, but you know, you're an adolescent, you're a teenager, and you just don't, you want to scarf down your food as fast as you can and get the hell out of there. You know, you just want to go back to your room. And so I just remember like I would ask for like not that big of servings, you know, and I would just like four huge bites and just scarf my food down, and
Really?
then I'd just be like, I'm done. And then
Are
I
you a
would like,
fast eater now? Like, do you eat really fast?
I'm very fast eater.
Yeah, you ate that shakshuka like basically through a straw. I mean, it was like gone before we started.
Katie, my wife, always sort of tells me to slow down, because yeah, I mean, I hadn't really thought about it, but it might be ingrained from adolescence, because I did learn to just try to get out of the dining experience as fast as possible, because I just wanted to, like, you know, get out of the family situation and go be alone, you know. And so
That's interesting.
yeah, I hadn't really thought about that. That's
Yeah.
this is therapy.
Yeah, I know. I'm not kidding around. It's lunch
Wow.
therapy. Well, do you feel that way like when you go out to like a nice restaurant? Like, are you sort of scarfing it down then too and sort of like looking at your watch like when's this going to be over, or can you enjoy like a meal out in a different kind of way?
I definitely can enjoy a meal out. Like, I enjoy company for sure, but I still eat pretty fast. Although I just went to this dinner at have you been to that Japanese restaurant in Gardenia? I think it's called Odafuku. Let me just make sure that's the
No, I
right name.
haven't.
Oh man, it is. Yeah, Odafuku. It's
Okay, I'll
in
try to go.
Gardenia. It is the best Japanese food in Los Angeles. It's maybe the most authentic Japanese food you can get in LA. I was there with Dave Chang was there, and Roy
Wow.
Choi, and, you know, they were like, this is as good as it gets Japanese
Oh,
food.
wow.
Like,
So this is like a
yeah.
real inside scoop. Are you sure you want this to be on a podcast for everyone to hear?
Oh yeah, shoot, are we giving it away?
Yeah,
Well,
not that many people
maybe.
are listening to this. It's okay.
It'll help business, I think.
Yeah.
Because
So is it like a kaiseki kind of meal, or is it like a sushi kind of meal, or like what?
they brought out, like, you know, they had tempura, like soba noodles, like you name it. It was just kind of like just classic Japanese food. That and there's like sashimi, like just it was coming out like crazy. And it definitely, I took my time eating that. Like, I was not rushing through that. And one end of the table was actually giving our end of the table shit, because they're like, you guys need to eat faster.
Oh,
And
really?
yeah, so I think I do. I think for the right occasion, I can really like slow down and then savor it.
So I'm curious with the whole Korean background and like the Korean aspects of the show, like are you how did the show play in Korea?
It played really well. I think we were in the top 10 for a really decent amount of time. I want to say, I think someone told me we like got up to number two or number three,
Wow. And in terms
which
of
is
people's reaction, I mean, did they relate to like some of the family stuff? I mean, did you get feedback from viewers in
yeah.
that way? Yeah.
I've been hearing that the show has really cut through with very like kind of like I mean all ages, but definitely with kind of the younger, artsier crowd. Because you just don't see a lot of especially Korean American pieces of television that are in this tone. And so I think that's been cool. And then I know people overseas have been like, you know, they've been really liking like hearing the parents talking Korean yeah, I've seen a couple of YouTubes too, like Korean, like different Korean YouTubers like dissecting the show and all the themes and but yeah, the show did really well globally. I think we at one point we were in the top 10 across 87 countries.
That's
And so
amazing. That's
yeah,
so cool. I'm so proud to know you. I was like, when this happened, I was like, hey, I know that
Oh,
guy.
thanks.
Yeah, that's really
Yeah.
cool. I'm curious, like, in terms of your work ethic, because when I worked with you, I mean, I feel like you work really hard. And this kind of came up earlier when we were talking about like self-criticism or very early
Yes.
on in our conversation. Like, how did you, with something like this, like know when to stop? Like, how do you know, like, when you're rewriting and editing, and like, how do you know when like there's no more you can do and this is what it's going to be?
Just when they like tell you there's no more money.
Oh, so you just keep going and
If it
going.
were up to me, I would be rewriting forever. I would be editing forever. I'd be still perfecting. There's a lot of mistakes in the show that bother me to no end, and I would love to fix them. But
And do you feel like rewriting like with something like this? Because that was interesting. I was just listening to Jesse Armstrong on NPR talking about Succession, and he's a big rewriter too. But he said the you saw Succession, right?
Yeah, loved it.
Yeah, but that final when they're all saying goodbye to their dad on the
Oh,
phone,
yeah, so good.
that those monologues or basically those scenes he wrote that was all first draft, and he didn't want to touch it because he felt like he would sully the like emotionality of it, or just like he didn't want to like rewrite it. So were there? I mean, I guess that's part of what I'm asking too, is like, is it possible to rewrite so much that you kind of lose touch with what you're writing in the first place?
Definitely. I think dialogue, I don't really like rewriting too much because I do agree with him that sometimes just vomiting it, there's a purity there. You almost like channeled something. And there's large amounts of beef that are almost first draft. Like, because
Really?
that, yeah, we were under the gun. And so, yeah, I was writing the finale like as we were shooting while I had COVID. And
Oh no.
yeah, and like episode 9 too, like we were just writing like think through prep. And so a lot of this was kind of vomited. So I think dialogue wise it is nice sometimes to just throw that down. I would probably spend a lot more time just kind of like looking at structure and just making sure like refining emotional beats and you know, tweaking certain scenes. There's always ways to, I think, improve even a little bit. But yeah, I mean, it's probably healthy to stop for sure. Like,
Right.
it is nice that the process naturally has like guardrails so that you don't, you know, like go insane tweaking stuff forever.
Well, I'm thinking about the metaphor that you just use of throwing up or like puking it
That's
up on the page, because puke is a part of the show too. There's
yeah,
puking in
big
the
part.
finale. Yeah, so I'm like, there's something about puking, like almost like a cleansing or like a
Yes. Yeah.
purifying that you see like when you told the story or even in your
Yeah. I
own.
mean, I think even the finale, like I was literally sick. So I writing that, it did not only feel like I was like vomiting physically, and thus that's why, you know, I have the two characters vomit too. That's what I was going through. But then also, yeah, like there is sort of yeah, like because I think when you're like tapping into something like a truth in your writing, it's easy to like overthink it or get too ashamed of it or try to like present it in such a perfect way when the thing that I think people are going to attach to universally is probably like the pure vomit inside, because there's this Carl Jung quote that was sort of our North Star for the show. He said, one does not become enlightened by imagining figures of light, but by making the darkness conscious. And so I think the reason we gravitate towards so many like dark characters or dark psychology or like, that Succession episode, like it feels so exactly what would be going through our heads if we were in that situation, that it's like we're just trying to be as like transparent as possible, like just showing warts and all when you write. And then when you do that, I think that's when kind of people all over the globe will be able to connect with your material.
And Jung had that idea of the shadow. And I feel like in the show itself, you have that witch character that she sees in the mirror. And that literally feels like her shadow in a way.
Yes. Yeah.
And in a way, like the main characters are sort of shadows of each other too. I mean, there's a lot of Jungian stuff in there, which is great for this podcast.
And we also, in the finale too, there's this one, it's after Danny throws up off screen and then they're sitting down, and on the initial push, you see two shadow figures kind of in the foreground, and then they just kind of like wander away. And so I was kind of alluding to sort of Jungian shadow mythology, it's open to interpretation what that moment means, but you'll see a lot of like Larkin, our DP, the way he lit a lot of our characters. There's a lot of like one half is in light, one half is in shadow, like throughout.
So this was this was a big part of this. I mean, it's funny, like in terms of like the anger of the characters and the idea of anger, which is like such a big part of the show too. I mean, when I started watching it, I mean, I kept thinking about the state of our country right now and like
definitely
how angry people are. And so as you're talking about like purging that anger, it's like it feels like there's no release for people. And in a way, I mean, part of the thrill of the show is watching these people take out this energy on each other, because it's like, where else is this energy going to go? And it feels like it's very timely after the pandemic, and everyone's sort of pent up and sort of blowing up in politics and stuff. So I feel like that's part of the reason that the show was so successful, is we all could relate to that, that feeling of being pent up and unreleased.
I think that's definitely what we were tapping into, especially when we first started developing the show. You know, during the pandemic, I kept seeing articles that were like, road rage up 467%, you know, and there is this palpable tension in our society. And Stephen had a really great quote early on that sort of helped us in writing, where it's a Ursula K. Le Guin quote where she says, it's in one of her books, and I think it says, to oppose something is to maintain it. And I think that's so true of both characters in the show, where like it's actually the act of kind of fighting against it that actually creates the opposing force back, you know? And obviously there are times where one should have fight back, but often, you know, so many times in my life, I've found like by just kind of like letting go and letting the other person sort of like flail out first, it really dissipates it very, very quickly. And then, and then you can kind of come in, and then things have kind of settled, and then they let it out, and then both people can start to see each other's sides a little bit more. And it's just more and more harder to find when you look out into the world, just like who's gonna, like who has like the unconditional love in them to kind of like let go first. And you know, that's not to say that we should, you know, not have stances and morals that we want to like, you know,
standby, but there's so many videos of when you see, I forget which, I think maybe it was, I forget what news organization did this, but there was like some like former like Ku Klux Klan member or maybe like neo-Nazi member that now is like, dedicated his life to like, for like the Black community and just like being there for disenfranchised communities. And like the reason he turned is because the first person to like show him love was I think like a Black shopkeeper in his neighborhood or something. Like I guess he came in there, and I might be butchering the story, but he came in there ready to hate, and this guy was just like willing to give him a hug and just like really just like kept just giving love back, which doesn't always work. So I'm not trying to say that that's like a catch-all
So I
solution,
shouldn't
but
hug a Nazi when I see someone outside my apartment with a swastika.
Well, yeah, I mean, the new thing now is like you got to punch Nazis, which I do agree with. Like there are definitely times when we should be punching Nazis, they're like, or else like you have to stand your ground. But there's also some times where by letting go, just like Danny and Amy do at the very, very end of the show, like,
Spoiler alert.
spoiler alert, that maybe the letting go allows both people to let their walls down a little bit. And it may not work for like probably like sociopolitical stuff, but definitely in like personal life stuff, like whether it's with one spouse or a coworker, I do find that mentality works out most of the time.
This is good. This is a good podcast. Yeah, I mean, I agree with all of that. I was going to ask you, normally my final question, which I'll get to, is what are you having for dinner tonight? But before I get to that, I feel like I wanted to ask you about the road rage incident that you were in, which I'm sure you've told the story before, but for those who don't know, like what specifically happened?
I was at a stoplight and I think I was like checking my phone, of course. And then when it turned green, I didn't go fast enough. So then someone starts like laying on the horn behind me, pulls up next to me. It's a white SUV. It was a BMW X3. I remember quite well. And then he rolls down his window. It was a middle-aged white guy. And he just starts like screaming at me, like just all sorts of things, cursing at me, shaking his fist. And then he just drives off. And for some reason on this day, I wasn't particularly having a bad day, but I was like, I'm going to follow you. And so I zoomed up onto the 10 and I was just behind him. And I didn't really have a plan. I just kind of wanted him to like feel afraid. So he knows like it's not okay to do that. And in my head, I was like, all right, if he exits, I'm not going to follow him. Like, you're like, let's not like escalate this so much. But then fate would have it that we were going the exact same direction. Like, we were going from Hollywood to 4th Street, Santa Monica, like the whole
Okay,
way.
that's a
And
long drive.
yeah, it's a long drive. And so I think in his head, he was like, oh my God, this lunatic is following me through all of Los Angeles. Meanwhile, in my car, I'm like not angry anymore. I'm like, I'm just coming home at this point. And so I thought that there was something very interesting there of how we project so much onto the other person. There's so many assumptions we make. Cars are literal bubbles that we're in. And you have no idea what's going on in someone else's bubble, but you just think it's cold, hard fact, whatever you're projecting. And so it just felt very appropriate for kind of the times we live in today.
You think that guy watched Beef?
I hope so.
Yeah, he's gonna like call you for like a royalty check or something.
I know. Well, all right. Well, maybe he shouldn't. But
Yeah.
no, I do wonder sometimes, like, yeah, like what he thought of that incident, because I'm sitting here like portraying him to be like such a douchebag, but then in my car, like I was in a black BMW, like with tinted out windows, and it's like,
Right. Maybe he thought you were a douchebag.
yeah, and I'm like zooming up to him on the 10. And so
Did he see you
yeah.
for sure? Like, are you sure that he knew you were behind him?
Yeah, because he tried to like lose me sometimes, and then I would
Oh,
follow.
wow. Okay. So the lesson for aspiring writers out there is to like get into a road rage incident and chase somebody on the highway, and you'll get material.
Well, I mean, I will advise like just always break out your notes app anytime anything happens. Like the pissing in the bathroom that happens in episode one also happened to me in real life.
Really?
Right before the pandemic, we were fortunate enough to be first-time homeowners, and and so like a lot of like the Danny stuff was just born out of what I was going through, because I was doing like fixing things in the house that needed fixing, and you invite like handymen and contractors into their home, and I can't tell you how many times I've heard the like word warp. Like everyone's like, "Ooh, I've got warp," and like, and I can't, I've been like kind of taken advantage of sometimes. And on this particular day, there's some landscaping work that needed to be done, and it was a really hot day, and I think this one particular landscaper was probably having a bad day. And I think I bought them all lunch, and I don't know if there was something that he wanted that maybe I didn't get. I can't figure it out, but I could tell he was mad all day,
Really?
And I was like, oh, that's I hope he's like, I was trying to figure out what I did wrong. And then at the end of the day, he asked me to use the restroom, and so I, pointed him to our bathroom, and I don't go and check the bathroom after someone uses it, and so then I like said bye, they left, and it wasn't until hours later in the evening that I like opened that bathroom, and I looked down on the ground, and there was just piss everywhere. Like he had like completely missed the seat and just like sprayed all over. And so,
What? That's
yeah,
crazy.
and
And you
like
think it's because of the lunch that you bought, or you think something else was going on?
I don't I honestly don't know, or just maybe he didn't like me, or like, I feel like I tried extra hard to be nice, but then maybe in me trying to be extra nice, there's like condescension there. I don't know. Like I've definitely like thought a lot about what I could have done better, but immediately when I saw the urine, I had a very similar reaction to Amy in the show, where I'm like, "What the fuck?" And then, but then the thing I did was I immediately took out my notes app, and I was like, "Piss in bathroom, maybe use in script."
Yes. See, this is like, what is that called? Like sublimate, like when you sublimate your anger, it's like instead of like taking out your anger like by like, getting a gun or something, you just put it in your art.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the show was very therapeutic in a lot of ways, and so that notes app now, it's like I have a quick trigger finger when anything happens, or if I'm anywhere, I notice like the way someone's saying something, or like I was just at this like kind of like conference thing, and it was all sorts of different people, and there was one guy that was kind of like every time he like spoke was just trying to like flex a little bit, instead of having like that free flowing conversation. It was like, "Well, I worked on this and this and this, and this," and it had like you almost had to like force that into the conversation. And then I just took out my notes app, and I'm like, "Oh, like character who constantly like tries to bring up stuff they've worked on and forcefully interjects." And I'm like, "Oh, that's like an interesting trait, And so I think that's my favorite thing about writing, is just going out into the world, observing, and just writing down like all the funny ways that we think and operate,
That's good
because,
advice. Yeah. Well, as a final question, what are you having for dinner tonight?
That's a great question. I do not know yet. We usually do like Postmates or DoorDash last second.
And you said you guys never cook, like, because I'm looking behind you, you have a very nice kitchen.
We do. Anytime we have people over, like they can't believe. Ali Wong was just over, and she cooked us this really good adobo chicken that was like incredible. And she was like, "Your kitchen's amazing. You have like all the tools. Like you guys should really start cooking." And we're just not very good at it, and it's such a time suck that I just can't, like, it's so easy to just order. That's why it's
well, here's
hard.
My secret. I get my best writing ideas cooking and doing the dishes, because like then because I'm like just like not self, I'm not sitting at like a white page like trying to type, like I'm like doing something completely different, and it really helps.
That's not how cooking would go for me though. Like I feel like when I'm cooking, or the couple times I've tried, I have to be like so focused on, oh wait, like so then do I have to do this first and that first, and like it gets very like overwhelming. But I mean, now that we've talked about Korean food a little bit, I probably am hankering for some Korean food, or maybe but then the other side of my brain's like I should just order a salad and stay healthy. So we'll see.
All right, well Sunny, thank you so much for talking. Congratulations on the show.
Oh, thanks awesome. So much. Yeah, this is super fun. Thanks for
all right,
me.
Well, I'll hope to see you soon. Take care.
Yeah, thanks. You too. Bye.
All right, that's it for this week's episode of Lunch Therapy. Thanks again to my guest, Lee Sung Jin. If you haven't watched Beef on Netflix, be sure to give it a watch. It's a great show. And if you enjoy this podcast, as I know that you do, give it a subscribe, give it a like, leave some nice comments on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And if you want to keep up with my adventures and be reminded of future podcasts, give me a follow on social media, on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok at Amateur Gourmet, and subscribe to my newsletter, the Amateur Gourmet newsletter at amateurgourmet.substack.com. All right, I'll see you back here next week. Take care.